The topic is not strictly related to friction coefficients, but rather to, as we will see, to friction coefficient ratios, in a sense that will be perhaps clear later. So let's start back to the way in which we typically account for topological interaction in entangled polymers. And the simplest way is to account for that interaction by the classical mean field approach, i.e. by assuming that a chain is confined in a tube. And in that way, the problem reduces to a single chain problem. And to account for many chain effects, which are, as we know, very important in these systems, one has to make assumptions and things like that. If one wants to analyze these many chain effects more deeply, the best thing to do is to resort to many chain approaches directly. And there are two ways to play with many chain approaches. One is theoretically, and to my knowledge, there is the theoretical approach is possible for only for rubbers. Many chain theoretical approaches were performed only for rubbers. And by using a formalism called the replica formalism, which is a complicated, at least for me, approach typical in statistical mechanics. And there are quite old papers by Paul, Edwards, Vilgis, and Panikov in the 80s. And by this, within this formalism, the network structure is made up by a single infinitely long chain with cross and slip links. So we build up a network with a single infinitely long chain. This chain has cross links and there are slip links since the network is entangled. And the typical assumption made by Bull and the others is that the sliding across slip links is confined in the sense that slip links cannot cross each other. So slip links, chains can slide through slip links, but without crossing each other. Okay. Yeah, there is, but without giving details on that. That's the approach we know. Okay, and without giving any detail. The other possibility is that one of performing simulations. And simulations can be performed both for rubbers and for liquids. And there are two kinds. There is, a sort of detailed simulation where bead spring chains are put in the systems. And the interaction between these bead spring chains is somehow introduced by introducing excluded volume effects. So the topological chains cannot cross each other because they have a sort of volume. And there is by this sort of interaction, we prevent from crossing. And these simulations were performed by the Kramer's group. And you can do this simulation, but to account for topological interaction, you have to coarse grain at the distance of the order of the Kuhn length. What we started recently playing with is with a less detailed simulation by which we coarse grain at larger scale. And in particular, what we do is we choose as a typical coarse graining distance the entanglement spacing, okay? ME or whatever you call it. In that way, the chains in the network becomes primitive chains, as in the Ndoye-Edwards approach. So chains are phantom below ME, and we account for the topological interaction for at lengths larger than the one corresponding to ME. The way in which we model the system is the following. So we build up a network made by primitive chains, as I said. So a typical chain is a line like this. And we have chain ends, and we have slip links representing entanglements. And as it's written here, entanglements are assumed to be binary, so two chains only for that entanglement, as in the replica formulas, as in the classical theories. And these entanglements are described as rings, as slip links. So we, in the system, we have, imagine that this is a single chain, then you can make a network by this build, with this building block. And the network nodes, I call network nodes, the ensemble of slip links and chain ends in the system. In the case of Radberg's, we have that the chain ends are cross-linked one to the other, and so that we can form a rubber. In the case of liquids, chain ends are free, and so that chain can rotate and do whatever they like, relaxing any stress you impose after deformation. Okay, so which is the way in which, how do we simulate this network, this primitive chain network? So let me give you some names. So I call R, big R, the node position, either slip or cross-link or chain end, whatever it is. And each node in the network has a given functionality. So in the case of a cross or slip link, the functionality is assumed to be 4. So we have binary entanglements and simple cross-links between chains. So F is 4 for cross and slip links, and is 1 for chain ends. Then small r is what I call the subchain end-to-end vector, and each subchain in this network contains n monomers and Kuhn segments, and I call zeta the subchain friction coefficient. With these names, with these definitions, what we do is we write a Langevin equation on each node of the network. And the Langevin equation is the classical structure. We are now considering there is no, in the case of rubbers, there is no flow. In the case of liquids, this equation is valid only under equilibrium condition. Please.
Can you clarify again, the subchain friction is
per monomer or per subchain?
Per subchain.
Yeah. But no, okay. No. That's the subchain friction, which is assumed to be uniform. Okay, all the subchains are equal. There is a uniform spacing. Okay, that's an average subchain friction. I agree that in reality subchains are not equal one to the other. The monomer number can change in each subchain, and the friction will change. I call zeta, this coefficient, is the average subchain friction coefficient. Okay? So, this is the, so if we have a node, if zeta is the subchain friction, the friction coefficient of a node is F over 2. So in the case of a slip link, in the case of a chain end, the friction we give a chain end is half the friction of a subchain. Okay, so a chain end is associated only half a subchain. While for in the case of a node, of internal node, which has functionality 4, the friction we associate to that node is 4 over 2 zeta. So two subchains contribute to the friction of an internal node. Okay, so this quantity is the friction of a node times the velocity, and this quantity then is equal to the forces acting on it. And we have this force, this sum over all the nodes, over all the subchains pulling on the node, is made as F terms, because F are the subchains attached to that node. Okay, so that's the classical linear force law in a subchain, where B is the Kuhn length, and this linear force law can be made nonlinear by making a modification, as for instance the one suggested by Werner, to account for finite extensibility. So these are the spring law, the entropic the spring's contributions plus a Brownian random force acting on each node. So that's node motion. That's the way in which we account for node motion in the system. On top of that, we also have sliding through slip links. Okay, so there is also another way in which the system can move, and we across slip links we can have monomer sliding. And the way in which we describe monomer sliding in the system is by writing down a one-dimensional Langevin equation in this way. So we say that the friction associated to sliding is the friction of a subchain. So we look in the sliding process, we look at, in a sense, that two half subchains are involved in this sliding process. And let's call V this sliding velocity. So the first term is a friction times a velocity. And the driving force for sliding is the tension difference across the slip link, plus, again, a Brownian force, which is, in this case, a simple 1D Brownian force. The process is a one-dimensional process. So this is the tension difference between these two subchains, and that's the random Brownian force. Now, how do we calculate the velocity, V, the sliding velocity? Well, the problem is that the variable in our, to characterize the network, we have to define, we have to know this r, this small r, and the number of monomers. And so in a sense, we want to relate the sliding velocity to the monomer change associated to sliding. Okay? And the way in which we do that is by using a monomer, linear monomer density. So velocity and monomer change are related to a monomer by a monomer density. And so we say that the velocity of this process, imagine that you have here a sort of virtual bead. Instead of having a slip link, you can imagine to have a sort of virtual bead which is pulled to one side or to the other because of the tension difference and because of Brownian motion. Now the problem is to convert this displacement in terms of monomers change. Okay, so the way in which we convert displacement into monomer changes is by using a monomer density, a linear monomer density, and the monomer density we use is an average between the monomer densities on both sides. So it's a local average monomer density to convert velocities into rates of change of the number of monomers. Okay, so these are the two, the node motion and the sliding motion defines the two are the two Langevin equations in the system. And after that, we calculate the stress. And for the stress, we use the standard Cramer's expression. And now what I will show here is preliminary results, typical results for a monodispersed end linked rubber. No, we do not create and destruct slip link. This is a rubber. Okay. Now, today I will speak about rubbers. After next week, we will speak about liquids. Okay, so we can discuss that later if you don't want to wait for the next week. Okay, so referring to rubbers, these are the equation. You don't need anything else. Okay, let's consider uniaxial elongation of that kind of rubber. Okay, so imagine that you have a monodispersed rubber with 8 entanglements per chain, and what I'm plotting here is the reciprocal deformation, and this is the Mooney stress, the way in which typically stresses are reported for rubbers. And these symbols are the simulation results for the case in which we use a linear force law, for the Gaussian case. The line here is the prediction by ball at quarters, 81. And as you can see, and why do we compare with that prediction? Because that theory has the same assumptions of the algorithm we are using. So it's a primitive chain network where slip links, where sliding through slip links can occur, but slip links cannot cross each other. So as in our case, we do not destroy slip links. So sliding is limited to the adjacent, to the consecutive slip link. So we compare with that theory because we believe that we should get similar results. And that happens only at small deformations. So the small deformation modulus is indeed confirmed by the theory, or vice versa, the simulation results confirm the theoretical prediction. But what happens at large deformation is that our results are much less steeper than the theoretical prediction. And typically, this theory has been used to has been compared to experiments, and the typical slope of the experimental results is much closer to the theoretical one rather than to this prediction. Okay, so somehow we are off. Okay, and this is also confirmed in the non-Gaussian case. So instead of using linear force law, we correct that by the Wörner expression. And again, we get these results. So you now have an upturn in the stress when you approach finite extensibility, maximum extensibility, and the full line here is the corresponding prediction by the corresponding theory, which is not the one by Ball, but one by Edwards and Vilgis, later theory, again based on the replica formulas. So also in the non-Gaussian case, you see that the simulation is somehow off at large deformations. And just to confirm this problem, what we do is reporting here these other symbols, the empty ones, refer to simulations by Kremers, Grace, Everest, and others. I don't know all the names. But those simulations refer to a lower number of entanglements. They were made with 4 entanglements per chain. And so for that reason, I also plot here this dashed line, which is the corresponding prediction by Edwards and Vilgis with the lower number of entanglements. And as you can see, okay, there is not a complete agreement, but anyhow, the slope, the emphasis here is on the slope. Both theory and simulation, the detailed simulations by Kremers and co-workers, do confirm the fact that the slope is has to be this one, rather than the one we have in our simulations. So both the Gaussian and the non-Gaussian case, our slope is somehow wrong for some reason. And so we investigated this by looking at the extent of sliding in the system. So what we are doing now is we study the effect of deformation on sliding. And I'm plotting here deformation and this strange quantity, which is a measure of the extent of the sliding through slip links. Okay? And what you can see here is that the amount of sliding with increasing deformation decreases. For some reason, in our simulation algorithm, monomers slide less when the deformation is larger across slip links. While in the theory, this is not the case. I mean, in the theory, there is not the same quantity, but if you read the papers, there is a quantity they call X, which is a sort of measure of the extent of sliding. And in the theory, that quantity is assumed to be a constant with deformation. And X, okay, I know the value for another quantity which they call eta. If someone knows the theory, they use a parameter in the theory, the one you mentioned, they call that eta, and that value is the one they suggested, 0.234. Okay?
Responsible
No, 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 no. Stopping. The maximum distance monomers can slide is the distance between slip links. They cannot pass each other. Okay, eta equal to that value I mentioned correspond to that. Okay. Okay. So eta or x, whatever you like, the amount of sliding is assumed to be that one. And we can get our simulation can coincide with theory only if we force in the theory a deformation-dependent extent of sliding. Okay, and so if we just played that game, we force the theoretical result to overlap onto our prediction by changing that parameter in the theory. And so at small deformations, you don't need to change that much. So and confirm that at the small deformation modulus is okay, but with increasing deformation, you have to reduce in the theory the extent of sliding. Okay, just to confirm the fact that a small deformation, we are doing well. What I plot here is the small deformation modulus for non-Gaussian chains with a given number, average number of monomers between slip links, which I called n in a subchain. So I'm plotting here the cross-link fraction in the system. And here is the small deformation modulus, the one you can get by extrapolating the stress-strain response at small deformation. So the black symbols are our simulation results. The line here is the prediction by Edwards and Vilgis. And these white symbols are some results by the detailed simulations I mentioned before, which, however, refer to a slightly different number of monomers between slip links. So that was 72 rather than 50. So we have, look at this modulus, with accounting for error bars and for this small difference, for this difference in the number of monomers, the agreement is certainly satisfactory. Okay, so at small deformation, theory and both simulations, detailed and less detailed, are consistent. So the other observation could be that the simulation results, the black ones, confirms the additivity of free energy contribution. This linearity in the modulus is typical of the when you make an assumption that free energies of slip and cross links are additive. Okay, so the problem that we have is somehow related to friction in the sense that we made an assumption on the friction coefficients, and so we gave a friction to the slip links. So we have a 3D motion of slip links in the network, and we said that the friction associated to that motion was zeta over 2. Okay, it was f over 2 times zeta. Sorry, it was 2 zeta. Yeah, so f is 4, so it's 2 zeta. Sorry about that. It's not zeta over 2, but it's 2 times zeta. And while the other friction was the one associated to sliding, and we said that the friction associated to sliding was simply zeta. Okay. Now, if we change zeta itself, what will happen is that changing zeta will change the relaxation kinetics towards equilibrium in this rubber. So if you make the friction smaller, the rubber will go quickly, more quickly to the equilibrium situation, to the equilibrium stress. But that change will not change the equilibrium results. Okay, the only way to change the equilibrium results in the rubber is by changing that ratio between the two motions I mentioned. To realize that, I just wrote this sentence. Please.
Isn't that change time scale? How can you change equilibrium?
Yeah, let's read this sentence. If slip links become cross links, if sliding friction goes to infinity. So if you say that the sliding friction is infinity, you are making slip links, you are transforming slip links into cross links. Okay? And if you do that game,
but if you find this line that's finite, it's long enough, you reach equilibrium.
No.
Let me make another example. If you consider a chemical reaction, you consider the forward and the backward reaction, they are two kinetic forces. These are kinetic. But the ratio of the two is the equilibrium constant of the reaction. So the ratio of kinetic can be equilibrium.
Yes.
No, this is a very different case. Here you just mechanics. And if you're finding a whole force of deformation, you're going to get the equilibrium. It's a quite dramatical. This is the survival. There's no way you're going to get the
equilibrium. It's not
a right. Yeah, it's only right cross. It's ergodic, and all you're doing is changing how fast it passes, and you're going slow or faster.
What I say is that if the sliding friction is infinity, what I get is a straight line, a horizontal line here. Okay?
We agree with that, but if it's large but it's finite, it's a question of length. If it's finite, as long as it's finite, no matter how light it is, if you can run long enough to reach equilibrium, then you'll get the equilibrium the same one as
that. It's a resistance here. My way of reasoning is also, but do we agree? If you make dimensional analysis, the parameter of the system are the density of the nodes. I mean, we played with periodic boundary conditions, and you have to choose three things. You have to choose the density of the objects you put in your box, then the number of entanglements, and the other parameter. If you make all the equation non-dimensional, there will be another parameter, which is the ratio between the two friction coefficients.
I don't agree, because if time average and sample average are the same, I can just do ensemble average and get the same result.
So what you say is true for an ultimate equation, but if you use statistical mechanics, that doesn't end up being Hamiltonian, so it should be there.
Because we just checked. Okay, and we did that, not me personally. The simulation was performed by another guy, and we played with that, and it got different results. Probably they are wrong.
What you must be able to do is to satisfy the people, one way of doing it, would be to cast your model for these two. You've got two models, one with one ratio, what you call ratio.
Yes, okay.
Another one you labeled without the ratio. You must be able to describe those models without using the word friction at all, writing only a free energy. And if you can show that they're also different in free energies, I mean, take the chemical reaction ensemble. The reason that the rates are different is because the energy states are different, and there's a Boltzmann factor to be satisfied. And that of course gives you a rate, couples your rates if written in that way with your equilibrium statistical mechanics. But you can equally well describe the chemical rate differences without any mention of the word of transport numbers, because you can just deal in terms of the energies of the reaction.
Mm-hmm.
You don't need the activation state. So similarly, you must be able to describe these two different equilibrium systems without using kinetic language.
Okay. But in any case,
another way maybe is to look at this ratio of friction in terms of connectivity of the network. In the sense, if you increase the friction of the node motion, you are effectively reducing the motion of that node.
Are you changing the phase space or not? If you don't change the phase space, or you change how fast you get from point to point, that's irrelevant.
In this particular case, I think that the communication that you're using is not derived from the free energy of Hamiltonian.
Yeah.
Of the
free energy. But they can use chemical potential.
I don't think that you get same speed.
I think that might be the problem.
Let's go back to the question.
Yeah, let's.
So this is sliding. And this is not motion. So that's the two equations. We did not start from statistical mechanics. That just went sensible, I mean.
I think the point is in that first equation, the first term on the right hand side is the derivative of the free energy with respect to R.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And the Brownian force is the sliding, the frictional part. The Brownian and the left hand side. Now on the lower equation, what you've got is that when you plug in that V expression, you've got a mass change. So it should be a derivative on the right-hand side, the first term on the right-hand side, should be a derivative of free energy with respect to the number of monomers, which would be a chemical potential. Then if you do that, these sets of equations are completely determined by the free energy. There is a Hamiltonian.
The actual difference in that case is only, it's not very relevant.
A small deformation.
Yeah,
that may be, but yeah. At either rate, if you do it that way, this is either equivalent to that or it's not. If it is equivalent to that, there is a Hamiltonian, and friction should never matter. If it's not equivalent to that, then there's a thermodynamic problem.
Sure. Okay, so that brings us back to the fact that we should work with chemical potential, but there are views. Because of the fact that the monomers are connected in a tree. So you cannot do
that. Question from us, or
this is a dynamic equation for matter.
Yeah. Okay. So what we are learning now is that at small deformation, everything is almost the same. It's the same.
We can try. I am rather skeptical though that minor change can.
I see why you are. If it is the same, if they're equivalent, then you have an underlying Hamiltonian, you have an underlying free energy, and then friction should not matter. It should be only an equilibrium calculation as well.
Okay. So this was just, this was the last slide. We are not happy with the results. We were just guessing which was the problem. But perhaps we are wrong. Okay, perhaps we are wrong. We should start from differently, as we are saying now. Oh, that's helpful, anyhow.
Your system's not really ergodic because the slip links can't pass through one another, so preparation matters, doesn't it?
But
preparation matters.
So the duration will matter.
No, the rate.
But if you have the same preparation state and different
frequencies,
you get the same answer.
Yes.
And
then I agree. I'm just thinking.
No, listen. Those data.
I agree. I'm just thinking about the difference between the theory and the simulations. I don't know what the theory assumes about preparation.
Well, the simulation is probably much better than the theory.
Hopefully.
but the
it's a completely different model. Yeah, it's a primitive chain one.
Isn't this ratio of the friction here just the ratio of how much fluctuation you can have in the slip links versus fluctuation in the chains so that it would relate to an equilibrium property?
I don't know, really. Okay, so I learned enough.
we have a few more minutes for questions before the last talk, and the questions can be on either paper.
Yeah.
There is one confession.
We did.
You did or did not?
We did.
I
do not remember details. I mean, because I didn't do that personally. But I saw plots, and I didn't see anything strange. What would you check?
I'm asking about the position of the maximum on the compression side of one of the lambda. There's a double point position, but in the shape of the width of the maximum that is experimentally.
Okay. No, I did not personally miss it.
Because your model is a theme, and that's the biggest problem.
Your model is?
A fine.
Okay.
Where?
No.
No, it can move.
Pardon?
No, the move according to the first line.
It's not.
They move a theme.
No.
It's a 3D, right?
I mean, it times zero plus, you deform it finally, but then.
If you talk to the average position of a slip ring before and after the deformation, measure the distance between cross lanes and between slip rings, you will find that with this particular model that it deforms practically.
But only if not very wide.
This is
why
it's a random network. On average.
On your average.
On average, that.
On average, anything.
No, not there. Here your distance between segments is a thin.
No, not necessarily.
In a pairwise slip ring model, that's
complaining about the way this model behaves. It's not the obvious.
Can we check that?
No. Perhaps you might rephrase that as a suggestion. It would be interesting to know how non-identifying this model is.
Yeah.
We have to get
the code.
By the French guy
visited that.
This is a 3D network.
Yeah, it's a 3D.
You form the boundaries, and then the rest in the internal just follows.
Yeah.
Yes?
Periodic boundary condition.
Periodic boundary.
Yeah, that was.
But you have many strands, and you really only.
So for time zero, you displace everything at finally, and then.
Let the system
roll on there. So
with another you can equilibrate. I mean, before deforming, you can switch on dynamics. Before deforming, you equilibrate the system anyhow.
And because the connection would distort the randomness, sometimes the individual chain before being connected were strained a little bit. Because after connection, they would contract and become again essentially governed. So with a construction trick, we started from an initially Gaussian distribution of both chains and subchains.
Yes.
It's
fourfold, yeah.
But the topology of the overall network is not the same as the topology of a regular individual network, or
almost. There were some three-functional connections and a negligible amount of
B.
Three-functional
connections. And what?
Because an end of chain will find partners to surround it in a given. So at the end of the construction, the functionality was close to 4, but not 1.
Yes.
Above 4 was forbidden.
And what we also did, it ran simulations at different, with the different initial topologies. So before, the results I showed are averages over several runs with different quenched topologies. Okay. No, I didn't say that. So the problem is still open. I mean, if the friction coefficient doesn't matter, let's assume that so the problem still remains. I mean, why? Probably, as he mentioned, we are not using the right sliding equation.
I doubt that is very important. But then, yeah.
Then I'll check.
So we should use chemical potential to derive. Okay. Okay. Thanks for the feedback.